No one warned us. No one said you were going to lose both engines at a lower altitude than any jet in history.
Simulations showed that you could make it back to the airport.
Not possible. I felt it go.
From director Clint Eastwood, critics are calling it a triumph. 5 stars.
Brace for impact.
What if I didn't get this wrong? What if I endangered the lives of all those passengers?
People call you a hero.
I don't feel like a hero.
Sully, Miracle on the Hudson. In cinemas December 2nd. Certificate 12A.
Interesting. Not really too sure what happened.
I think you fucked up.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 12 of the Tottenham Way Podcast. I'm Tom and I'm your host. Joining us this week, we're delighted to welcome Greg Stobart. How are you, mate?
I'm very good, thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Greg Stobart of Squawker.com.
Yeah, it's a weird name,
And you're the stats guys, is that right?
We are stats guys, yeah.
Do you do expected goals? And if you do, can you explain it to me? Because I don't know.
I'm not that big on Twitter, so I missed this whole argument about the expected goals thing. We don't actually do it, but the Opta Pro guys do, so we get our stats from Opta.
Look, yeah. While we're talking about this, I've got a Opta-related question that's annoying me.
Okay.
So Opta are saying that Spurs conceded once from open play.
Dan Kilpatrick, by the way.
Hello. the Musa goal. But Chadley's goal was at West Brom was from open play, right?
I think it was. I would say it's in a set. It's
come off a West Brom player's head, mm-hmm. flicked to the back post. Another West Brom player's headed it. Lloris has saved it onto the post, then kicked it away with his leg, then Chadley scored. I feel like there's like enough touches there for it not to be from the corner.
If there's two phases of offside, then I think there's two phases of that corner, if you like. I think that's a goal from open play.
I think it's goal from open play.
Yeah.
You can email them and ask them, mate. They will explain it to you. Do you remember last year? Like, there's a weird thing with Man City. I can't remember. It was like Sterling or De Bruyne or Silva. Someone scored or there was an assist. And there was a big argument about who had the assist. Right. And they'll explain it to you. For me, I agree with you. That's an open playing goal if ever.
But they're going to say something like, the ball wasn't cleared, so it still counts as from the corner.
Well, what counts as a clearance? Out of the box?
But okay, take like Eric Edmonds' goal, the goal at Liverpool. That's what cleared by one header. Mm. Then he picks it up. Smash it in the top corner. There's less touches between that going in and Chadley's, but it's gone a long way out.
Mm. So are you trying to say that wasn't planned?
Not at all. That's one of my favourite Spurs goals, isn't it?
I think
it's a grey area. I think we're being generous to Spurs if we say that they've conceded once from open play. I think it's twice.
Yeah, I think so as well.
As you know, I'm tackling the big issues.
Yeah, I was going to say, could we care any less? yeah, ticket prices.
Yeah, and was Chadley's goal from open play? Which yeah. Fucking wasn't.
Hot topics. Greg, you're a Spurs fan as well, we should say. I think probably most Spurs fans probably follow you on Twitter, but, I mean, do you kind of give off the fact that you're a fan as well, or do you have to remain quite professional?
I have to be a little bit more neutral than Dan, I'd say, because I'm still covering a lot of Arsenal, Man City, Man United, all the big clubs. I think Liverpool's the only club, really, where you can be a professional fan. It's weird. They're in their own little bubble, and it's the whole Liverpool pack, Merseyside pack, is just a load of Liverpool fans professionally supporting Liverpool. Yeah, for me, yeah, you're just going to get accused of bias. It's one of the reasons I'm not that busy on Twitter, to be honest, just because I can't be arsed with the grief I get from rival fans. I don't try and hide that I'm a Spurs fan because naturally you're more passionate about Tottenham. So I'm going to end up writing about them, tweeting about them. And I know more people at Tottenham, I guess. So I've never tried to hide it, but I do. I think when you become a journalist, Dan, you probably agree with this as well, you do get a little bit detached, and especially when you're covering other clubs. So I'll go to an Arsene Wenger press conference and you walk out and think, you know what, he's actually all right. I quite like
get
him.
Out. Yeah, I think when you're covering one club, it almost becomes a bit harder because you have got to focus all your time on that team, and then it's hard to draw a distinction. Like, how am I focusing here as a fan, or is this work? What is it? And
do you get bored as well? Do you get, or maybe bored's the wrong word, but oversaturated?
I get fed up of covering Tottenham. Yeah, there's times when, especially like during the international break and I still have to write an X amount of Tottenham stories and to write something almost every day, and it's just nothing, and it's just like, ugh. It can get tedious. It obviously can get tedious, and that was also part of the detachment, I think, like thinking everything becomes a job eventually, even if it's your passion, and that's can be difficult.
Yeah, I mean, every time you meet someone, you say, I'm a football journalist. They say, oh my God, everyone must hate you. Like, that's a dream job, all this kind of stuff. And you try and remind yourself that a lot. And we know we're lucky and it's a really cool job and everything. But it does become a bit of a job sometimes. And, you know, sometimes I just wish I had worked Monday to Friday, had a job I liked and had a season ticket at Tottenham, because once or twice a year I get to go to Spurs as a fan, really, to have a beer with my mates or my cousin and actually enjoy a game, because the rest of the time you're under a laptop. And, you know, next weekend it's going to be North London Derby and Dan and I are going to be there. And if Spurs score, it's under the
well, to be fair, I'm going to be watching that as a fan, and I would like some detachment from it, because I can't do it. I think I've said on this podcast before what I'm like. I should get, maybe, if I'd have known better, I would have got my fiancé to do a 5-minute recording of what it's like to be around me on the day, because it's not fun.
But that's quite a good point, actually, because the Liverpool game was the first game I haven't been to this season. And it's the first game I've watched on TV as a fan for, I don't know, 6 months or something. And I was sitting there, and I remember, I forgot how horrible it is watching a game on like Sky as a fan. It's not fun at all. But normally when Spurs would score, I'd go mental, I'd jump up and be like, yeah, get in. And when the opposition scored, I'd just go quiet, and my housemates would piss me off. But maybe it was because it was the League Cup, but I definitely found myself caring a bit less.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, it may have been because it was that, but even before, I was quite... I get behind it, and I think that my detachment level is definitely increased a lot.
There are peaks and troughs, though. I mean, end of last season, we're all going absolutely mental, weren't we, the Chelsea game, the Stoke game. I mean, for me, the worst game I've ever covered... I've seen Spurs get thrashed a few times, like that City away, the horrible AVB one. Cup semi-final against Chelsea, but the Redknapp season when we were miles ahead of Arsenal and we were 2-0 up, and I was at the Emirates for that game and having all these Arsenal fans around me, all these Arsenal supporting journalists as well, and then you have to write 500 words on how brilliant Arsenal were and then do the press conference on how great, what a great day for Arsenal. I mean, that was pretty tough, I've got to say.
I entered a Guardian competition with that game. Like, it was a minute-by-minute report thing. You know how they do it, like Barry Glendening and Steinberg and all that. And there was this competition that they were running at the time, like, pick a game of your choice, send it in, and then we have a final at, it's up in King's Cross or something, isn't it, Guardian? And that was the game that I chose to cover, and obviously at 2-0, and I'm like, you can tell, I've still got it somewhere, and you can tell just the immediate drop-off. I think it's Sanya scored, wasn't it, to make it 2-1. And you can just, you could like sense something in my writing a little bit. But it worked, got to the final.
Well done, mate.
Nearly won. There you go. We're all journalists.
Classic Spurs fan.
Yeah.
So that's very Spursy.
I was probably leading to the last 10 minutes, yeah. Greg, you've broken a couple of stories recently, or quite big stories. So we had, first of all, the White Hart Lane's, the station name, which they're looking to change to. Are they looking to change it to just Tottenham?
Tottenham Hotspur Station. Tottenham Hotspur Station, yeah. Yeah, well, basically, it's quite nice. Firstly, it's quite nice to not be doing transfer stories. So when you get to September and August, you can dig your teeth into some slightly more interesting stories and spend a bit more. You know, these stories don't just pop up. You have to spend quite a few days working on them sometimes. But yeah, the plan is, so as I understand it, White Hart Lane Station was going to be renamed anyway to something along the lines of Tottenham North. Spurs want to disassociate completely with the White Hart Lane name. I mean, it's really sad, but it's not a surprise, really, when they're trying to sell naming rights for the new stadium.
That is a shame, isn't it?
I am surprised, though. I think if anything, just keep the station. Like, do everything else. They're going to do everything else to the stadium anyway. I feel like just leave it. That's the one thing that they could legitimately just leave, and it would be absolutely fine. There's no detriment to us making any money out of that. No one's going to go... Should we go to the Qatar Airways stadium today? Where is it? I've got absolutely no idea. There's no means of finding that.
You say that, but I think they would. People say, let's go to the Etihad, let's go to the Emirates.
Yeah, the stadium's fine, but I mean, the station, if you like, why change it?
I see what you mean. Yeah, people still say, we'll get the train to White Hart Lane.
I think people at the stadium as well. I'd still say, I'm going to White Hart Lane.
I mean, that's what they don't want, though. That's why they're trying to remove all traces of White Hart Lane, because, you know, you want the best naming rights deal you can. Even if you look in a lot of the publicity for the stadium project, they're getting rid of this NDP thing because they didn't want people to start calling it NDP, Northumberland Park or anything like that, because they want everyone to associate it with Qatar Airways. And, you know, Arsenal fans all thought they were going to call the Emirates Ashburton Grove, and it's not happened. They call it the Emirates, and Spurs have been quite clever with their marketing on that one. But, yeah, basically, going back to the station thing, I spoke to a couple of people at TFL, and they turned around and said, if Spurs want to change the name to Tottenham Hotspur rather than Tottenham North, they're going to have to pay £12 million for it. It's probably a negotiating position. They've seen, you know, from a PR perspective, they've probably seen there's going to be a backlash of everyone saying, look, why my tube's always late and delayed, and there's all these problems, and you're charging me 12 quid a ticket, but you give Tottenham a free name. So most likely Spurs will have to pay a few million towards the redevelopment cost, towards the name change cost, change a few maps, change a few signs. And then they stick it on the map, Tottenham Hotspur, which will help. Firstly, it will help, you know, if you're expecting more fans and maybe some tourists coming and the NFL fans, it might help help actually people get around. Because no one, you know, you when a European team come to Tottenham last season, no one knows where they're going, do they? They're always asking where to go. So it might actually help in that sense. And I think Spurs would probably be willing to pay a couple of million to do it. Certainly not 12 million.
Yeah, fair enough. Dan, what do you think about it?
I think I agree. I think it's a shame that they're trying to airbrush the name from history. But rather it was called Tottenham Hotspur Station than Qatar Airways Stadium Station.
Yeah, true.
Or something similar.
Uber Stadium.
Nice segue, mate. Second. To Greg's next story.
We need to stop making reference to the segues, because they work really well until we point them out. No, you did break a story. This was this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, just late last week. Yeah.
Supposedly we're in talks with Uber about naming rights for the stadium. Where's that come from? Like,
So basically, they started talking to Uber in July. I didn't write everything I heard. This is another one. I don't think it's going to happen. But as Dan will tell you, you just write what you know. You can't put your opinion in a news story. So they started talking to Uber in July. There've been four or five meetings, I think, with Uber about naming rights deal. I think they're quite far away on the price because Spurs want a fortune. They want 20 to 25 million, which is an awful lot for a year.
For how long?
Between 6 and 15 years are the conversations. Ideally, Spurs would want a 10 or 15 year deal.
Well, the Etihad's on 40 million a year.
That's a FFP get around dodgy deal, that one. True. I mean, the original Arsenal deal was 2.5 million a year, and no one really knows the value of the renegotiated one because it's tied in with the kit deal as well. So there's not really a precedent for what you pay for these, and Spurs are trying to sell the NFL thing as, you know, their big plug as well. I mean, I don't think Uber's going to happen because people at Tottenham are telling me they're talking to, firstly, companies with more money. Uber, I think they lost £1 billion in the first half of this year, and they want to partner with, you know, a big financial firm, a big bank.
It doesn't sound like the sort of thing that, it doesn't tie in very nicely, does it? There's no...
I mean, one of the things I'd say is, you know, in terms of, for Uber, in terms of worldwide reach, and they're trying to be the global on-demand transport hub, it makes sense because it's direct to consumer. I don't get AIA. Like, I still don't know who they are. Do you know who AIA are?
Like, insurance?
Good's that deal done, you know? So for me, it make a lot more sense than an insurance company. But yeah, you'd expect it to be a big bank, a communications company, mobile phone network or something, or most likely an airline. I think we've mentioned Qatar already, and there've definitely been talks with Qatar as well, and I think that's going to happen. Well,
someone was putting it about on Twitter. You had a mocked up image.
Oh yeah, I had the image
Uber
as well.
Stadium.
That's the image that came up in the. That's the image that Tottenham took to the talks with Uber, mocked up stadium image.
Someone had a mocked up image of the Qatar Airways stadium that was doing the rounds as well. So it sounds like they've made maybe however many of these, and then had a few meetings and brought them along. So someone had either made a really good one or got hold of the Qatar Airways mock-up as well.
I think I'd rather anything but Qatar.
Yeah, there's just not really any redeeming feature to it.
If it was
like 10 years ago, pre the FFP changes, we could at least dream about signing Aguero and whoever, and it would be great. But I feel like now you're just sort of selling your soul. As a supporter, like, anyway, it wouldn't be nice.
And everything we said that we can joke and partly truthfully joke about with
Chelsea, kind of feel like we wouldn't really have a lot of legs to stand on in regards to like where that money's coming from. So, yeah, I don't know.
I'd agree with that. Like the human rights issues, the ammo people could, you know, fire at Tottenham. You don't really want your club to be like that. I think it will be Qatar. I think Qatar QSI, is it QSI? QIA. QIA, Qatar Investment Authority. I think they'll eventually invest heavily or buy the club, to be honest.
Levy, as a Jewish man, do you think he'd have any qualms about selling to them? Or do you think he's just businessman first and he doesn't give a fuck?
He's businessman first, and secondly, he's still got a boss who's Joe Lewis, who's even more business first.
Right.
I don't think they care. For them, it's just business. Levy obviously cares about what happens with the club after he leaves, but I don't think there's a Jewish Muslim thing going on here. You know, Spurs will look where the money comes from. I just think Qatar, they've got the World Cup in 2022. They still haven't invested in the Premier League. They want to be visible in football. They've only got PSG. They're desperate.
They've got the World Cup coming up.
They've got the World Cup. Mm. The Qatar sports minister's a Spurs fan. Big Goss.
Oh,
he's,
yeah.
He's pushing it as well.
Did you tell me that on
Saturday? Yeah, pushing for it.
Where's that from? That's out of nowhere. We could probably talk about this all night. It's very, very interesting. But you hung out with Ledley quite recently as well.
Yeah, we had him as a columnist for a couple of months before and during the Euros.
When you say a columnist, how much was edited? How much did he actually write?
Oh, I didn't write. I ghost wrote.
He spoke to you. Yeah, you wrote his column.
I speak to him for 20 minutes, half an hour on the phone, and then I'd write it up. He did a couple of podcasts with us. I mean, it's one of those you always. I wouldn't say I've met quite a few of my heroes, but you still always worry that they're going to turn up and be a bit of a dick, be aloof. But Ledley, good as gold, is exactly as you imagine. He's up for a laugh. Went for a beer as well. Went for lunch.
well,
you know what? I always think back to, you know, that Teddy Sheringham.
Give me a call next time, mate.
That Teddy Sheringham line is autobiography on Glenn Hoddle. Have you ever seen?
No, tell me.
So Glenn Hoddle was Sheringham's idol growing up, and then he wrote in his autobiography, you know, Glenn Hoddle's my idol. I used to go to White Lane watching Matt. Boss, I couldn't wait to meet him. I met him first time I met him, first training session, and I thought, I'll be allowed to swear on this.
Yeah.
C word.
Go for it.
Yeah, go on.
you prep the listeners now. Yeah. You know what's coming, people. Yeah. So
it's a quote as well.
Yeah. I thought, oh my God, what a cunt. But it wasn't like that. Ledley's not at all.
Yeah.
He's absolutely top bloke, exactly as you would imagine. I think he wants to go into media now, to be honest, because he was coaching for a while.
Well, I spoke to him about, just to try and one-up you, but I'm not going to one-up you. he did an interview about toward the end of last season, and at the time, the last I'd heard, he was like coaching the whatever under 19s or something,
15s,
like under 15s, 2 or 3 days a week. And then I asked him if he was still doing that, and he basically said like I couldn't really handle the pressure, or I didn't like it, like it was sort of getting a bit much. So I've taken a step back. So I thought, right, if you can't handle or you're not enjoying coaching under 19s, he's not going to be a manager. He was sort of saying, oh, maybe I'll come back to it, but I think media seems like... He's doing the ambassador thing, but I think media seems at the path.
Yeah, I think he's getting better as well with what he's saying. He's got quite good opinions. I mean, like I said, I was doing the columns with him during the Euros, and he was saying what we were all thinking, and he was talking quite analytically about a team. I mean,
he's doing something for Joe now, is he?
He's doing the Facebook Live. I don't like that show, but if they get it right, it might be quite good. But yeah, I don't think he enjoyed the coaching. I think he was thinking about it too much.
Yeah,
he's not the kind of guy on a Friday night wants to go to bed thinking, what am I going to do with my under-15s tomorrow?
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. And, you know, someone like Chris Ramsey was just a coaching encyclopedia, knew absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And I just don't think Ledley has the heart to put in the time you need to learn all the stuff, because it's not a turn up and 4-4-2, let's knock it around.
Yeah. I think it consumes you, doesn't it? Because actually, when Sherwood got the job, he did a couple of quite candid interviews. Or his interviews are always quite candid. But,
yeah. Go on.
But he did a couple of interviews where he was like, oh, I'm going, you know, I'm dreaming about Emmanuel Adebayor, I think he said. Or like, I'm going to bed and it's like whirring around my head. And I think as soon as you get into that and you... I mean, it's happened to me on Football Manager. I've lay in bed thinking about signings, formations, tactics. But... it must be worse in real life.
I feel like that's on a par with what Sherwood did, to be fair.
So I can sort of understand what Ledley's getting at.
Yeah.
I can empathise with you, Ledley. I know you're listening, mate. So you're not alone.
Yeah.
Gives us all sleepless nights.
You, Dan Kilpatrick and Ledley King on a mental plane together. We should probably talk about some football because we've played a bit of it quite poorly, but we should probably talk about it. Dan, you were saying about Liverpool in the middle of last week. We lost 2-1 in the not-sponsored...
The League Cup.
League Cup. Which I only found out the other day. No sponsor for it.
It's called the EFL Cup.
Yeah, the English.
Is that why? Because there's no sponsor.
Yeah.
Why don't they just call it the League Cup?
Because it's the English Football League Cup. I think it's official.
Okay.
Good content this.
Yeah.
We made a lot of changes. We know that Pochettino's not serious about this. He's never been serious about it. I know we got to the final in his first season, but it kind of felt like almost. It was before he knew it. We were in the semi-finals, and that was when
he probably knew we weren't going to get top four, and we definitely weren't challenging for the league. So why not? As soon as he thought we were ready to step up, which was after 8 or 9 games last season, he completely stopped caring about the League Cup. I think. Last year we had Arsenal in the third round, and he played a weakened team. He played Fazio.
Mm.
If you're playing Fazio against Arsenal, you don't care about the League Cup.
It's his last game as well.
He never played again. He never heard from him again.
Yeah. His slaughter game. To be fair, even though it was a weakened team, and you can say the same about the Arsenal game as you've just said, but I was a bit more excited about the team that I saw before the game. So Carter Vickers, Winks, Onoma, Harrison on the bench, and Kudu did start.
Yeah.
I think at least it wasn't just let's just put a team out that if we get anything it's a miracle. This was maybe a bit of a learning curve. Do you agree?
Not really, no.
Do you think that they were as much kind of lambs to the slaughter as last season?
I don't think it was lambs to the slaughter, but I think it was Spurs like second 11, wasn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
It was Liverpool's second 11 too. Yeah. They had Sturridge and Origi, and basically that was the difference.
But Spurs second 11 has a lot of young players in, which is a really good thing. But I don't think it was anything other than just a second 11. But I agree, I like seeing Carter Vickers and Winks in particular, and I quite like Nkudu actually. I thought he was all right. We'll come on to it, but I thought he was all right against Leicester.
I like Nkudu because he's unpredictable. I don't like
and he
Nkudu.
Wears like Alan Partridge shorts. Yeah. You see, against Leicester, he's wearing like really short, like 80 shorts.
That Joey Barton tried to bring back a couple of seasons ago. He had really short shorts and a moustache. Like, he was really trying to bring back the Sooners. It was great.
That was questionable.
Did anyone impress? It wasn't a great performance, and I don't think it was ever going to be a great performance. But did anyone, Greg, sort of stand out for you in a good sense?
Well, you were there, weren't you, Greg?
I was there, yeah. And firstly, Pochettino was delighted to be out. I mean, they were on the team coach within 15 minutes of full time. Boys were in the shower and straight out. What? They were gone.
No mix though.
No, they just stormed straight through. They didn't want to be there. Delighted to be out. I mean, he threw the Europa League last year, so didn't give a toss about the League Cup. For me, just every time I see Harry Winks, I don't think he was brilliant. I thought he was a lot better. I mean, the kids were let down by the more senior players. Wimmer was awful. I thought Dyer was really poor. Harry Winks, every time I see him, looks like a proper footballer. You know, just his technique, his understanding of the game. He's got a brain. He's a step ahead. I mean, my worry with Josh Onoma is that he's not a step ahead. He's thinking after he gets the ball. Harry Winks isn't. He knows what he's going to do 3 or 4 seconds before. His decision-making is brilliant. And I thought after Victor Wanyama came on, I mean, it was the last 10-15 minutes when Spurs were pushing anyway and we got the penalty and we're back in the game. But I really thought he was the one taking control of the game in that last 10 minutes. And, you know, you can see why they let Mason and Bentaleb go and why they're desperate for Tom Carroll to leave, because Winks has got something about him and I think he's a potential first-team player.
Yeah, I agree with that. And actually, the team didn't really bother me. As you said, it was nice to see a few young players. I almost think just one change, maybe Carroll for Wanyama, or either Eriksen or Lamella or Ali for Carroll. Just one change, and it would have been a lot more competitive. I think it was I'm not putting this all on Carroll by any means, but I felt like it was almost just one player short of being a bit more competitive. Mm. And actually, against Gillingham, strangely, Spurs had a stronger team. Yeah. Like Eriksen played in that. I think Lamela played in that.
Yeah, they both played.
So it was almost like you wanted to go out, because if he's playing that team against Gillingham, and maybe he was hoping for another easy draw. I don't know, but I would have wanted to see maybe one or two more senior players.
Mm.
But I agree with Greg. Like Winks, I think I was actually a little bit disappointed with him in the second half against Liverpool. I thought he was forcing it a bit, and he gave the ball away a couple of times, and it was sloppy. But he's a footballer, and Carter Vickers as well. Vickers was people. I sort of called out Vimmer on Twitter and said I think that would be his last game for Spurs, and I do, unless we get a really easy FA Cup third round draw.
Or injuries, obviously.
Yeah, or it'll be very interesting to see if Vertonghen gets injured, whether he comes in or whether Carter Vickers does. But I've forgotten what I was saying now.
Yeah, I thought you might have done. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Greg, you were going to say something.
I've forgotten what I was going to say as well now. No, I was going to go back to Harry Winks and say next to Wanyama, we saw it in pre-seasons where he played with Wanyama against Atletico Madrid and Juventus. And I think that partnership, the Wanyama's power and his speed and his physicality with Winks' passing ability, I mean, he could end up anywhere between Luka Modric and Mark Noble, but he's that kind of player, the player who can...
That is a big spectrum.
Yeah, he's a very big spectrum, but you know what I mean? The deep-lying playmaker, the guy who can... I mean, how much were Spurs crying out for a Modric type on Saturday with Dembele and Wanyama in there? There's no guy or enough... Even my mate came and met us for a drink after, and he said... That Winks, he's an Arsenal fan. He said that Winks looks like a real player.
Wow.
Because in the last 5 minutes just came on and started making things happen and makes it tick. And I think you need that player who controlled the game.
Mm.
And we haven't really got that at the moment, especially with that, what Poch calls a second band or something, doesn't he?
Mm.
The three behind. With none of them firing, I think there's room for Harry Winks in the side at the moment.
Although I will just say that Wanyama is a better footballer than I thought.
Yeah.
He really is. Against Leicester as well.
You said, we had this conversation after Man City, didn't we, about Dier or Wanyama being a better footballer.
Yeah, I still...
And I said Wanyama was a better footballer.
Yeah, I think Dier... Sometimes when I watch Dier... Like, remember when he played right back and he was quality at crossing? And we know he's good on the ball. I just feel like he's got potential to be a really good deep-lying defensive midfielder who can sort of dictate the play and spread the ball and use it really well. But that's kind of what Wanyama's doing now, and it almost feels like Dier's... Maybe it's just because he's just been playing there, but I wonder if Dier's going to end up back at centre-back after all.
Yeah, I think so. I think if we are losing Wimmer as well, then there's that fourth spot is very much open, and I think that if Wanyama's going to stay on form... I mean, it's great. I think we've always known that Pochettino likes players that play two positions. It's always like... More so... probably further up the pitch, but if you've got someone like Dier that can play those two roles, and if Wanyama's going to be first choice and Toby's going to be first choice at centre back, Dier's still going to get quite a lot of games, I imagine.
He did a bit after Liverpool with the standard where he said, I don't want to be pigeonholed, I want to be like Alaba or Lahm and be able to play three or four different positions, which Pochettino will quite like.
Can I go on?
I was going to say, I mean, Poch has only played three at the back once, which was Watford away last year, weirdly, and it kind of worked. But we're seeing a little bit of return. Guardiola's tried it. It's working for Chelsea. And actually, you'd think of a Alderweireld, Dier, Vertonghen, push the fullbacks up, especially the way we're playing going forward at the moment, play a 3-4-3 or 3-4-2-1, whatever you call it.
And Walker and Rose are up like and down. Spot on for those fullback
positions.
I think
there might be room to actually go to that. I mean, they'd have to work on it in training, but Poch is the kind of manager who'll be looking at it in training, I think.
Even Toby and Vertonghen are great for those wider centre-back positions because
they both play fullback for Belgium.
And they're good footballers. Like, they're really good passers, really good runners.
Yeah, that's a good shout, actually. I wonder if we'll see that before.
Well, Chelsea are doing it, aren't they? And
yeah,
it does feel a little bit, particularly them at centre-back, it does feel a bit square pegs, round holes. But, yeah,
they've got Azpilicueta, Cahill and Luiz.
Yeah.
Who are all doing all right?
They're doing all right.
They're playing a lot better. I mean,
that's for like the squarest of pegs.
I mean, it's one way to protect Luiz, basically, because he makes a couple of mistakes every game, and in a three, doesn't happen so much. It means they can play two, but we're not talking about Chelsea here, but it means they can play two proper box-to-box midfielders as well, Kante and Matic, which Spurs have got two. Mm. And most importantly, it's freed up Hazard. and maybe Spurs can do that. What we want is Dele Alli playing right off at Harry Kane or Vincent Janssen.
Not Tom Carroll.
No.
I feel like a lot of our problems, a lot of like all these issues, all these questions are just sort of solved by an unformed Dembele. Like, as soon as he gets back to his best, it doesn't really he can play in that two or in the a bit higher up, and he just dominates the middle of the pitch and he just makes Tottenham play. And I almost wonder whether the sort of the struggles for goals at the moment are more Dembele related than they are the people further up the pitch than him.
That is so interesting, though, isn't it? Because Dembele doesn't...
Because he wasn't... I thought he was better, but he wasn't at his best.
He doesn't gain
first, first half, he's getting there, isn't he? He's getting fitter.
Yeah, I think he loves the North London derby as well, so I'm hoping that Sunday he's going to be on it. But he's not been there yet, has he?
No, not yet. I think Rosa said it last week as well. You notice an unfit Dembele more than anyone else. Everyone else, it's like when Lamella and Eriksen are off form, it does feel a little bit sort of... Oh, they're just lacklustre. But with Dembele, it's just like he's got no power. He's not at full charge yet because you know what he can do. So, can we just talk about Tom Carroll? Because I think he's really funny. He was terrible on Wednesday. And you've asked in the running order, Dan, which I think it's worth asking. We've joked about this, but seriously, is he only still at Spurs because he's Harry Kane's mate?
I think he's only still at Spurs because Spurs want to get a transfer fee for him. So,
well, we got $8 million from Ryan Mason, didn't we?
Yeah, so he signed a new contract last month to 2019. And, well, Greg, you might know more than me, but that's just so Spurs can get a fee from him.
It went down
in January
really well,
or,
didn't it?
Or the end of the season.
They tried to pitch him to Newcastle for the Sissoko deal.
Really?
Benitez wasn't having it, or we were asking for too much money, probably a little bit of both. But, yeah, it's no secret.
And we ended up with Sissoko anyway, so it kind of says a lot, doesn't it?
No, well, they were trying to do, you know, 20 right. million plus Tom Carroll value.
They were offering
million.
Money and Sissoko for Carroll.
Oh, dear. Yeah, strange one. Dan, as well, we spoke about Wimmer quickly, but you were talking about Poch's rant in Germany. Presumably this was after Leverkusen. What's this about?
Well, I added it to running order because it was quite interesting. Someone asked Pochettino about Wimmer in Germany, whether he has a future at the club, and Pochettino was very like animated about the fact that he did and was annoyed. But I think there's a case, I think there's a chance that Wimmer might not play again. Yeah. I mean, I know that Spurs tried to sell him in the summer, or were open to offers at least, weren't against selling him. And
that story didn't go down very well, did
it? No, it didn't. got panned. No. Yeah. But I think amply justified now.
Yeah, like, that's a fair point.
Another journalist at the game who follows Spurs regularly said to me, do you think Pochettino's put Wimmer against Sturridge and Origi just to show him up? And I don't think he's that Machiavellian, but I just don't think... It's just obvious he doesn't rate him, isn't it?
I mean,
regardless of left foot or right foot or fitness or attitude, you don't put like an 18-year-old centre-back who's never played in the Premier League on the bench ahead of an Austrian international who was good last season or looked good and he's played a couple of seasons in the Bundesliga. You just don't do it unless you don't want them and you have a problem. Mm. So I think we might not see him again unless there's a couple of injuries or the FA Cup third round is a lower league team.
I think you're right, Dan. And when, you know, when Pochettino loses faith in you or he doesn't want you, he's never tried to hide it, has he? You know, Kabul, Adebayor,
one's ever come back.
No,
they?
And, you know, some of the players have tried to talk to him. Like, Andros tried to talk to him and he just said, well, you know, he said, what's the problem? What can I do? He said, no problem. Just wouldn't pick him again.
He's
ruthless, cold. Just doesn't pick you. He won't, you know, you're just outcast. And I mean, Guardiola's done the same at City. Or maybe Mourinho's done it. Maybe it's a sign of a top-class manager. And I think it's trying to keep... It might be a mentality thing, I think. You mentioned that you think Wimmer might be a bit overweight. And
no.
And I think that's part of it. If, you know, if you slip, Andros, slip once, out the door.
Yeah.
I've got this theory that I'm wondering about, which is that Pochettino always wants someone on his shit list. At all times, like it's just a constant example to the rest of the club, the rest of the squad. Because I remember last season it was like started off it's Fazio, And in January...
Townsend.
In January, he left. Then Townsend was on the shit list.
Bentaleb.
And Townsend left. Bentaleb was on the shit list.
He just sounds like an arsehole, doesn't he? Like, everyone really loves him, but I just...
He's just ruthless.
Which is great, and I'm fully on board with it. But I think
at the start of the season, he's had too many players he likes. Is that right? Who can have been off?
Yeah.
Vimmer, you look a bit podgy. Fuck you. Go and train with the
under-21s. Yeah. Yeah, he's an interesting bloke, isn't he?
One player got sold, never played again after asking Pochettino why. So Pochettino got rid of the masseuse and brought in a chiropractor, and one player got sold. He just went up to Pochettino and said, how come we don't have a masseuse and we've only got a chiropractor now? Never played again.
I know who it is, but I'm not going to say.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
you can't do that.
No, yeah. No, fuck all off. The listeners.
All right. Okay, we've got to that stage, haven't we? Let's move on quickly. So we had Leicester at the weekend. We asked Kath and Rosa last week about whether you think this is a grudge match and whether you have like any ill feeling, and they made no secret of just how much they hate them.
Yeah.
We kind of knew that they were going to come and have the banner, do the songs. They were going to take the piss, basically.
And did you go? Yeah.
No, I didn't actually go. I kind of think that it's fair enough for them to take the piss, because we did this whole songs of Leicester City, we're coming for you last season.
Yeah, they did Tottenham Hotspur, we're waiting for you.
And that's fair enough. I really don't see a problem with it. Like, I've got no reason to... I would be unbearable if we won the league. I'd be awful. Like, I'd probably be dead right now, because someone would have found me by now. I just wouldn't have... I could not have given it a rest. So I think they kind of know that they're probably going to finish, like, 9th, 10th this season.
Mate, they do not give one fuck.
That's what I mean. And quite right.
Like, they wouldn't have cared if they lost that game as well. Like, it's... As long as they finish in the top 17
mm-hmm.
and get to the Champions League knockouts, which they are going to, then it's a great season.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much true of every season while Ranieri's still at the club. For the next five, whatever years, they can just finish mid-table and he'll be an absolute legend. So,
but do you, after that game, having seen the sort of reaction, I didn't really feel like there was enough from Spurs fans. We didn't. Very quiet first half.
What can you say?
Give back? They won
the
league.
I'm not saying there is anything to say back, but support. It didn't even seem like we were singing about ourselves. I was only watching on a stream, but it didn't. It just didn't seem like we were. We almost treated it as if they were little Leicester, and I think that was a bit of a problem of ours because we just let them.
Well, you're talking about the actual fan base of the
Spurs
team.
Fans in the ground. I thought it was very quiet.
It's a bit flat.
It was a bit flat. Yeah, fair point.
But has it changed your perception? Because you weren't sure last week, and then Kath and Rosa started spitting bile.
I wasn't sure if I hate Leicester,
or if you treated it as a grudge match, basically. But do you?
I think there's definitely an added rivalry there that there wasn't before because of last season. Obviously, like 18 months ago, if you'd have said Tottenham versus Leicester, it's 5th against 12th, it's October. That would have been like one of the smallest games of the season, but now it's actually one of the biggest games because they're champions and we pushed them close. So there was definitely an extra edge, but I still don't really give a fuck about Leicester.
You know what?
I still care more about Arsenal, Chelsea, United, City. But I still want to beat them more.
Yeah.
Last year you were just really jealous of Leicester, weren't you? Really more than anything. I don't hate Leicester. You know, I hate the Swansea manager who said he wanted his friend Ranieri to win the league. I hate Ashley Williams for giving the ball straight to their striker. I hate Tony Pulis for saying he wanted Leicester to win the league. And most of all, I fucking hate Chelsea for what they did last year. I don't hate Leicester. They just did their jobs.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And I think that's probably the way people at
Tottenham
feel.
We hate that everyone else wanted Leicester to win the league and it felt like it was being set up for them to win the league, wasn't it?
And we were the villains, I think.
Well, I wrote a quotes piece from Pochettino's press conference before the Leicester game, and I asked him, do you think that people wanted to beat Tottenham more than Leicester last season? And he was like, no, I don't believe that. But I think probably people at Tottenham don't begrudge Leicester winning the title and have a lot of respect for Ranieri, but I think the mood is that they didn't like, this is just guesswork, but that they didn't like the way other teams approached Leicester.
Mm.
And all that kind of fanfare and people publicly saying they want Leicester to win the league must have really grated
before
on
Tottenham.
Before they played both of them.
Poch said it last year, remember? He got angry and he said, oh, it wasn't just the Chelsea players. I'm talking about Stoke. I think Stoke came out and said
Yeah, he did
well.
Say it at one point, didn't he?
He did say
it
at the end of last season. I mean, he said, you know, I think next time there's a manager's meeting, I think we need to talk about
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
So, you know,
But I think actually Spurs could have handled that whole thing a bit better. Like, the players were all very nice about it. And all they needed to do is just say, you know, say publicly, oh, it'll be interesting to see how Chelsea play against Leicester or how they play against us. You know, just something like that, just to put a little bit
play
of pressure back on, play the game. But it's done now. I honestly...
Feels like ages ago, doesn't it?
Feels like ages ago. Honestly, I'm more unhappy about those other teams, and I still consider Leicester a relatively small game in the calendar compared to the Arsenals, Chelsea's, etc.
Yeah, fair enough. Gave us a good game, though. We Leicester sort of haven't really been firing this season yet, but... They look pretty good, I think, and we just didn't... You've used the word quite a bit this season, Dan, but we looked undercooked again. We're kind of getting there, but we're not... There's not that edge, is there?
Well, I remember saying to Greg afterwards, I felt like it was like the old Leicester, so the Leicester of last season, and the old Tottenham, but the Tottenham of kind of 2 years ago when Pochettino had first come in. Like, we didn't look very fluid in attack. We didn't really click.
I think we're a little bit low on confidence.
Yeah, I think that's true. But then there was the whole thing about conceding early in the second half, like almost straight after kickoff, which is what we used to always do. And you just felt like Wanyama made the mistake. You felt like he just wasn't that switched on. He was having a great game, and that was just a weird mistake to make.
Walker as well just didn't track.
Yeah, and it just felt a bit like the old Tottenham, and I couldn't really place why. But I thought Leicester did what they did last season. They were fucking filthy. There were so many fouls.
How annoying was Okazaki?
They were time-wasting on about 50 minutes. Yeah. As soon as they equalised, they were time-wasting. It was just like, you know what, that's how you won the league. You drew and won all your away games.
Mm. Greg, you'll like this. Some stats. So we're averaging over 18 shots a game, but we're only averaging just over one goal. I think we're at 1.3 goals or something like that. Just as an obvious comparison, Arsenal are getting 2.3 goals from 15 shots a game. I don't know what that means, but it looks good. That's surely a sign of a problem, isn't it? We're just not clinical, and we've said it so many times on this season. But like I kept saying it on Saturday. Where's our next goal coming from? And I know that I think Ali hit the bar, Vertonghen hit the bar, but at the end of the day, our only goal was a penalty. What's the problem? Is there a single problem that we can point to, or is it just the whole team?
I mean, if you're pointing to a single problem, it's Harry Kane, isn't it? I mean, we're starting to feel it now. It was okay for the first few weeks when Dele Alli and Son were on form and scoring, but now we're really missing him, and Janssen's going to need a full season to get going as well. I mean, even these shots, the 18 shots per game, you're not thinking of that many chances, really. On Saturday, certainly, there's a lot of long shots, deflections, you know, blocked shots. Mm. I think it's just the last week and a half, almost. You know, West Brom, there were the chances were there. First half of Leverkusen, the attack was flowing, they were playing well. But ever since half-time against Leverkusen, second half against Leverkusen, Bournemouth, nothing. Mm. Pretty much nothing against Bournemouth. Very physical game. Nothing against Liverpool. And like you said, against Leicester. I mean, it felt like a game that... You know, I've seen that game before with teams that win titles. You know, Mourinho, Chelsea would play that game and they'd win 2-1. They'd find a way at the end. So would Fergie's United. But Spurs are just a little bit short at the moment. Bit of luck, like you said, hit the bar twice. Bit of confidence, like you said, Eriksen. Son, I thought, was awful at the weekend. Eriksen's badly off form. And you're missing Harry Kane. You take 25 goals out of the squad and you bring in a guy who can only score penalties. What's going to happen?
Dan, do you agree?
I don't disagree with any of that.
We should talk about Janssen because we spoke about him last week. But I thought it was actually a half... Granted, we are used to Harry Kane, who is kind of a freak as a striker in Tottenham terms. But yeah, I felt like it was an okay performance from Janssen. I thought he struggled first 20 minutes, but I think that he kind of played within the width of the penalty area, and everything he did within that was good. When he goes wide of that, it's worse than ineffective. It's nothing. It's blur.
I just want him to, like, fucking turn round.
But he did. Like, but he did do that once, and he turned on the edge of the box, and he got one away, and
he just went
wide.
But he still started with his massive arse facing the opposition's goal. It's like... You know, he scored that goal for Holland in the international break where he ran at Belarus. He's not slow, incidentally. He looks slow, but he's not actually slow. He ran and stuck it in the top corner. I haven't seen him do that once for Spurs. I like Jansen. I don't think he's a bad player, but I think he's. I've said this like for the last 3 or 4 weeks. I'm just repeating myself, but I think he's doing that thing where he's compensating for a lack of confidence and for not really wanting to miss chances by just playing it a little bit deeper, working hard, and looking for a pass instead of being a selfish centre forward. Which actually Kane has been guilty of doing that before, but I kind of want Jansen just to get in the box and face goal. And
do you know what I think Jansen is? He's like the reverse Pavlyuchenko. He's good at everything. At the moment, he's good at everything except scoring goals. Pav was good at nothing. But he was a really good finisher.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know any player looks good on YouTube, but if you have a look at like what Jansen did last season, he can definitely finish. He's definitely a scorer, but maybe it will take a season or whatever to get up to speed with the Premier League. And it just, at the moment, I would rather have, if Harry Kane isn't fit, we'll come on to this, I think, but I'd rather have Son up front and bring in Lamella against Arsenal.
Yeah, against Arsenal, maybe. Need some movement, I think. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I agree with you, Tom. I think that's the best Jansen's played since the first couple of games. I thought he was decent against Palace, even though he missed a sitter, and he kind of changed the game when he came against Everton in the last 20 minutes. But since then, there's been nothing for me, really. I think the plan on Saturday, according to backroom staff, was to get runners off him, and that didn't happen as well, really. So that doesn't help when you're playing it into his feet, and the plan was Son and Ali running in behind, but there was no space there, and it didn't really happen. I agree. I think certainly against Arsenal, if you're expecting a bit more space on the counter-attack, you look at the way Middlesbrough played against Arsenal away last week. Dama Traore was ripping them apart on the counter-attack. So I think you want Son's pace in behind, run the channels. You don't want a static striker who's going to get monstered by Koscielny and Mustafi. Mustafi. You don't want a static centre-forward. Unfortunately, Jansen tries hard, but he's just not ready yet and he's too static.
And the third...
Good penalty, though.
Yeah, he
can take a penalty.
One against Liverpool as well.
He can kick a ball forward quite hard.
He can definitely do it. When there's no defenders in the way, he's brilliant.
Yeah. I spoke to some Dutch journalists when we signed him, and the things they said, he's a cross between Van Nistelrooy and Van Persie, firstly, which is...
Sounds all right.
Yeah.
I'm up for that.
Is he?
And they said he's got an incredible mentality, and, you know, very good players have had slow starts in the Premier League.
It's fair.
But with Poch, you've always got to give someone a year as well. He looks a bit overweight to me as well, to be honest. He's obviously a strong guy, but he doesn't look quite sharp enough. And if you're 5% off in the Premier League, you know, you take Harry Kane became brilliant when he just became physically 5% stronger, 5% quicker, and all of a sudden he's got space to use his technical ability. And before that, he didn't have it. So it'll take time, but you back Pochettino to improve players. Look what he's done with Danny Rose, Lamella, Walker, all the rest of them. So give him a year to settle down, but we desperately need...
I do agree. And I think I'm going to ask a question here as well. Do you think that we need to kind of trust Pochettino with Christian Eriksen as well? Because we mentioned that he's off form, but he's really dipped, hasn't he? Quite significantly from the last couple of seasons. And that's not just goals and assists, but it just looks like he's not really taking the same sort of risks as previous.
I think he's playing a different role now.
What do you think's different? What do you think
before,
he was doing? And
before
what's he doing
Dele Alli, he was number 10, wasn't he? Before Alli joined the club. And that's when he scored 10 Premier League goals in the season. I do think when people say, oh, he stopped scoring goals, it's because he generally plays deeper now and often ends up on the right or left, which he doesn't really like, by the way. He wants to play number 10. But a couple of years ago, the Denmark manager, who was Morten Olsen at the time, he called out Eriksen and just said he needs to be doing more. He's not a young player anymore. He needs to be influencing games. And this was when Eriksen was 22 and he'd been playing Champions League football since he was 18. He'd been in the national team since he was 18. And Olsen just said, look, this isn't training at Ajax Academy anymore. You need to be dominating these games. And I sort of feel like we're now at that point with Tottenham. He's just got a new contract. He's one of the top earners. He's 24. in a really young squad. He's not a young player. He's not a passenger. He just needs to do a bit more. Yeah, that's what I think.
Don't you think he's always been streaky for Tottenham, though? And like
I do.
He'll have two. Usually it's before Christmas and after Christmas as well. I mean, last year he wasn't very good until Christmas, and then I think after Christmas he created more chances than any other player in the Premier League, including these brilliant playmakers like Ozil and De Bruyne.
But I do, but don't. But then I think when Pochettino's been asked about that in pressers, and he said, "Yeah, but he's he is very young, etc., etc." And I now think that's not. We know he's got the ability, and I just feel like everyone has an off day. Everyone has a couple of off games. Everyone goes in and out of form. But Eriksen routinely has half a season of being decent, half a season of being relatively anonymous.
Mm.
And that's a bit frustrating. I just think he needs to be a bit more consistent.
His last goal for us was in March, and that was against Bournemouth when we were already 2-0 up.
He scored against Gillingham twice, didn't he?
Sorry, his last Premier League goal. Right, sorry, yeah. So,
if you're gonna do stats, mate.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, finally. Yeah, it just feels like he's. I guess you were saying about Dembele. If Dembele's fitter, then the whole team looks better. But I do feel like there's a case for Eriksen as well. If he's trying to be the creative player, if he's trying different kinds of through balls, if he's trying to mix it up a little bit, go short, go long, then if that's not working, then I feel like he's as important as Dembele is. Greg, you were saying about how many chances he creates. When he's on form, he's not just good to watch, but he's a numbers guy. So
yeah, even at the weekend, he was statistically, I think he had 5 shots and created 4 chances, but you didn't feel like it watching the game, did you? I mean, one of the problems with Eriksen is, I guess he's the one player who doesn't have an alter. There's no backup, really. Maybe Lamela at a push, but the way Pochettino uses Lamela is just a snide, foully winger.
Yeah.
There's no number 10, really. And I mean, we all wanted to sign a young playmaker in the summer as well. I think we're missing because of that as well, because he's playing every week and there's no alternative to bring in. You know, if Dier's not playing well, you bring Wanyama in or vice versa. You know there are alternatives in every position, even if it's Kane for Janssen. But with Eriksen, who'd you bring in?
Well, we tried Kane at number 10 against Palace, didn't we? It was like Kane and then Janssen ahead of him. I can't remember if Eriksen even played that game. I think Ali might have been out. But if that's your alternative, playing your best striker at number 10 instead, then yeah, there's a deficit in the squad there, isn't there?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, Pritchard might have been that guy, but I don't think he's good enough.
No.
He was the only guy I can think of that was kind of similar.
Yeah. Or Tom Carroll. we've been speaking loads about this, so we should probably talk about Leverkusen and Arsenal. So, Wembley on Wednesday. It's been a while, actually. I know that our games are quite tight at the moment, but we've had 2 away games and an international break in between Monaco and this. It feels like a long time since we were at that first game. We are probably looking at no Kane, or if he is going to be about, it might be from the bench for five minutes.
But Potts said 50-50 after Leicester.
But we don't know with Potts when he says about injuries, though, do we? Because he's like, with Toby, he said something like, this week, next week, maybe the week after, maybe in a couple of months. Like, he's not very... He's pretty vague.
Well, it makes sense. He doesn't want to tell opponents who's fit and who's not. So he's always deliberately really... Maybe Leicester, maybe Bayern Leverkusen, maybe Arsenal, maybe... He's always pretty vague. I don't know. What do you think, Greg?
I don't think either of them will play before the international break.
Not against Arsenal. Right. I've got a feeling.
I spoke to someone on Saturday, and they said, at the moment, unlikely Alvarez or Kane play.
That is the latest reports. Definitely on Toby. Not sure about Kane. I think.
Well, actually,
Kane, the
reports, the Times this morning was saying Spurs are going to put him on the bench on Wednesday.
Toby.
Kane
I can see being a bit more
it's how desperate we get, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think he wanted to do it until he obviously doesn't want them going off with their countries during the international break. I think in an ideal world Spurs would be winning matches and he could have 2 weeks to properly build up their fitness, but you're getting desperate now, and certainly the Arsenal game, you think if you have to throw one of them in or both of them in, you might have to do it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I mean, particularly Kane,
particularly Kane, although I do think Alderweireld yeah, we're keeping clean sheets, we're not conceding many goals, but Alvarez is so much more than that, isn't he? Yeah, and
Sanchez is scary.
Yeah, that's fair. Do you,
he's the sort of first line of creativity, isn't he? I mean, his passing, we're missing his passing. Dyer, although I've picked him up as a creative passer about 10 minutes ago, he's just not in the same league, is he?
No. And it is so much more. It's not just how good a defender he is. It's the organisation, the leadership. I feel like he's our on-field captain. It's going to be... If there's any chance of them playing against Arsenal, wouldn't have them anywhere near the stadium on Wednesday against Leverkusen. And I do think we're good enough to beat Leverkusen without them. I think the first half against them, Greg, you were saying how good we were, and there was kind of a switch flicks at half-time, really weirdly, but... I think they've just won their first game away from home all season. They won 2-1 at Wolfsburg. That was two quite late goals as well. I've not seen it. I've just looked
but
it
in,
up,
in the
but
game immediately after we played in Germany, they got spanked 3-0 at home.
At home,
which is their
yeah.
first home defeat since March. Their form's really up and down. I think they've won 4, drawn 1, lost 4.
And they've beaten like Dortmund as well. And they really
they're really unpredictable.
And Hernandez has got quite a lot of goals.
Yeah,
well, like considering the amount of games that's been played, he's like their one goal scorer. But he didn't actually score at the weekend. But he's definitely the danger, isn't he? 85,000 sellout again. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think the good thing about these games at Wembley is, we're not playing it in our home stadium, and it might be a bit weird for the players. But let's face it, there's only going to probably be 4. Or maybe 5 games at Wembley that we're going to play in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. So Pochettino can really, especially because we're selling out and it's going really well in that respect, he should be really bigging these up as a kind of one-off event, a cup final, a cup semi-final, and just say treat it as like a one-off occasion. Mm. And I think at Monaco that might have got to the players and they were a bit like,
definitely.
The occasion's too much.
Yeah,
but
was,
now they've done it once, that he can say, right, you know what it's going to be like. There's 85,000 Spurs fans. Go and enjoy it. It's a sort of one-off.
I think it's,
and hopefully that will help us.
Even an extension of that, so not just the team, but I think Greg was saying before we started recording, like the social media side of things. We had Kyle Walker singing the Champions League music. We had
it's a bit gimmicky,
tweet
wasn't it?
After tweet about how we've sold the stadium out. Here's the infographic of where you got
that
it.
Bothered me, actually. It felt a bit like a non-league club.
It got a big draw
at United in the FA Cup third round. They were like, oh, we're going to Old Trafford.
Felt a bit soccer aid.
You know, Spurs earned the right to be in the Champions League. They've had to play at Wembley for reasons. And they've shown their might by selling it out. So we're meant to be there. We're not...
Yeah,
we're
it felt like we didn't take
it's not
it
a
particularly
treat.
Seriously. And I think, Poch is the manager now. He's not just the head coach. So you'd hope there'd be some influence kind of throughout the club from him, because there's got to be a bit better preparation, basically. What are you expecting on Wednesday, Greg?
I think Spurs will win. I mean, even when you look back to it's fine margins at this level, isn't it? And you think back to the Monaco game, if Son scores that chance early on, like you said, it's a cup final atmosphere. Spurs could have gone on to win by 3 or 4, but you get a bit nervous, you miss a few chances. Even the away game against Leverkusen wasn't too dissimilar. I fancy Spurs to win quite comfortably, actually. It depends partly what team he picks, because I think he's still going to prioritise Sunday. So, you know, the fullbacks,
rightly or wrongly.
I think it's going to be Trippier and Davis.
Trippier is Champions League specialist. Yeah, he's doing it right.
Can't knock Kieran, mate. No,
I feel like you'd like Walker... Yeah, you're good, mate, but blood and thunder of the Premier League.
Yeah,
fine.
To be fair,
you're not clever enough for the Champions League.
If you were offered who you're going to play, if you've got Leverkusen and Arsenal in the same week, you've got to play Trippier one game, Walker the other. You know what you're picking.
You know, he's done well. I thought he was one of the better players at Leverkusen, putting some good crosses.
Quite like Trippier. Kind of in that shit player way that it's not actually
it's
any good.
Quite random, isn't it?
Yeah, like, really, really like. Yeah. I was going to ask a question. I mean,
we spoke about Harry Winks earlier. I genuinely wouldn't be against playing Harry Winks in a 4-1-4-1, Wanyama behind, Winks and Dembele in front. You know, you're talking about Eriksen. You can either rest him, drop him, or push him out to the left. But it's a game, you know, in Europe, I think it would really suit him. Remember, you know, Michael Carrick.
Well, he came on to Moscow. But I don't think Poch is completely against. He's
brought him on the last 5 minutes to keep the ball, to control a game, which is what he does. And I,
you know, I think there's a chance he might play him.
Yeah,
maybe interesting.
Be fit enough as well. He's built up quite a lot of minutes. You know what I mean? Like he's probably had as many minutes as Dembele this season, maybe.
Ooh, no, less than Dembele, surely.
Dembele hasn't played much. No. Yeah, I think he's played, I still think he hasn't played as much as Dembele, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
he's played full games in the League Cup and then had four or five sub appearances.
I guess Dembele's on a run now because he did Bournemouth and he's done Leicester, so finally he's getting a bit fitter. The other thing I'd say, we really lost it against Leverkusen away when Janssen came off. He actually, I said this
and you disagreed.
Hold on, no, we stopped holding the ball. We stopped. Yeah. I
think the complete opposite of that.
Son didn't touch it after he went.
I thought we got a foothold as soon as Janssen came off and Son came on.
No, Sissoko came on. Son started.
Son moved from left to up front.
I'm getting completely confused. I'm getting confused with the
Bournemouth game.
No, because the Bournemouth game.
No, Janssen came on and we completely lost it against Bournemouth. He was just charging around fouling people.
Hold on, at Leverkusen.
This might need an edit.
Yeah, this might need an edit. Yeah. Hold on, at Leverkusen away.
Keeping all this in. You
at Leverkusen away, Janssen started up front.
Yeah, Son was on the left.
And then Son came on in about 60 minutes.
No, Son was on the left.
Oh, but fine. Son went up front. Yeah. Son went up front, is what I mean, about 60 minutes. And I thought Spurs were a little bit better.
No, I didn't see that at all. I mean, if you. Okay, that's. Statty, but if you look at the pass completion.
Ignore my match report.
That's what I said. I said this on the pod a couple of weeks ago, and you were like. Actually, that's a problem because the 90% pass completion, you felt that was a problem. He was being
I said the 90% pass completion is a sign of what I said earlier, which is that he is being quite safe, which is my criticism of Janssen. He seems to get the ball into feet and look for a quick one touch back to someone, which is fine when you're on the edge of the area.
Dembele came on and was just giving it straight to them.
Exactly. They were on 60s, which was really. And I think Rosa said it was like, oh, that's a not fit Dembele. But
yeah.
Still true, you know. You can't 2/3 of their passes.
Yeah, if you're away against a good side or at home against a good side, you've got to keep the ball. Mm. And I think it's a problem when the ball's not sticking at all.
My view of both Champions League games, obviously in Moscow, Son went up front and scored about 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
And in Leverkusen, he went up front. I thought we were better with him, but
we're good against City. To be fair, I think it's only Bournemouth that Son up front has really not worked against.
And I'm starting to feel like the City game is like a kind of false.
Yeah,
we're going to win the league, but maybe it was.
We
just
actually haven't won since.
Oh God, we?
Sad, isn't it?
We're going to win.
Sorry, we beat Moscow, but since then,
yeah, we're going to win twice this week, so it's all right.
Yeah, lovely. Well, you are confident about this, aren't you, about Arsenal? Because I obviously after Leicester, I was a bit downtrodden, and I.
Well, I'm not necessarily confident, but
no. What did you say? You said form goes out the window.
Yeah, I said it's a good time to play Arsenal because I think it's a good time for us to play Arsenal because. They're on great form and we're on poor form. But I think, I hate to say form goes out the window.
Because it doesn't.
But it tends to count for less in derbies. It doesn't really matter. It's about who plays better on the day. Normally the players are up for it. And I think Arsenal they'll come at us like City did. And they'll give us space. And the last thing Spurs want now, we've had three league games in a row where against teams who have sat back, been hard to break down, played in the counter and been happy for a point. And I feel like we just don't want to be playing another team like that. We don't want to be playing another kind of West Brom. I can't think of a team off the top of my head. The idea of Arsenal coming at us, being positive, leaving spaces for us to exploit, and it being a derby and that being the extra motivation, I think that's quite good news, actually. So we shouldn't fear it too much.
Thing is, Poch has always got them up for the Arsenal game, hasn't he? I don't think since Pochettino.
I don't think apart from the League Cup, we haven't lost to them.
I think in the league it's drawn 3-1.
Drawn 3-1-1.
And we were terrible when we first went to the Emirates.
Yeah, that's the Eunice Kabul heroics, wasn't
it? And we were just camped.
Oh, yeah. So he's actually good if he just played on the edge of his own 6-yard box.
And Ryan Mason's debut, Premier League debut as well.
Did Chadley score?
Chadley scored. Yeah. Great. That was the high press. The first time in a high press.
From open players.
And then last season, I think we should have won 2 or 3.
I mean, that was the turning point of the season, wasn't it? Last year. That was the game when Spurs really announced themselves because we'd had all the draws early on in the season. I think we'd thrashed Bournemouth just before, hadn't we? And maybe Sunderland
and
as well.
And City we beat.
And I think had a bit more momentum than this time, but it was such a good performance. And that's when he, I think Dembele started 10, didn't he? And Ali deeper. And then he switched them after about half an hour. And that's probably the turning point of the season. We lost to Newcastle a couple of weeks later, but just from then on, the creativity, the pressing was all spot on.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see the same sort of thing. And yeah, I hope
Lamella's not seriously ill because he's always important against Arsenal.
Mm. He'll get booked.
Get booked, come off, and then we'll concede and it'll be a draw.
Exactly. I mean, yeah.
The frustrating thing last year was they managed to change the game, bringing on Mathieu Flamini and Kieran Gibbs.
Mm. When Gibbs got the equaliser,
yeah, he scored the equaliser. Flamini gave them a bit of a hold in midfield because, I mean, he brought Cazorla off at half time because he was just getting absolutely destroyed by the pressing. So
he said he was ill, didn't he?
But yeah, he was struggling really, really badly. Mm. I mean, he's injured at the moment as well.
Last season, and I don't want to speak about it too much, but like the one thing that I really remember is about, because we went one up in the first half, didn't we?
Yeah, okay.
And they only equalised on about 79, and it was a horrible last 10 minutes. But there was a time where they could not keep the ball in their own half. Like Eriksen and Ali were pressing, I don't know who was playing centre-back, and the whole of the Emirates was just apoplectic with rage, and we just couldn't. It's almost like we couldn't stop winning the ball back because they were so bad. And in the end, I think we were surprised at how shit they were playing, because there were times where Kane got the ball and it was like he was kind of looking for the pass, because you expect to be pressed in a derby and you expect to have it in your face. And he was like, and then in the end, he'd sort of dribble a shot straight through to Petr Cech. And we had 20 minutes of just sheer dominance, and we didn't take advantage of it. And I think that was the last piece of the jigsaw last season, to just have that we can go anywhere and we can just boss it. And when we boss it, we're going to score goals and we're going to win the game. And we didn't quite do that. And I know we went away to City and we did it, but that was probably the only example as a counterpoint. But I don't feel like we've got that this time. I feel like and that was a confident Spurs. That's the main thing. They were high pressing. All players were on form. Ali and Dembele were knowing their role. Kane scored his goal.
But look, we hadn't done a lot this season before the City game. I mean, really, that's the only standout performance we've had in the Premier League. We'd drawn a few. We'd got a few 1-0 wins. So, I mean, we haven't been at the fluid best, but I just think the players will be up for it against Arsenal, and you'll see a different Spurs to the last few games.
Arsenal haven't been that much different either. I know they're on a good run, but last-minute win... I mean, the difference between Arsenal and Tottenham is they're finding a way to win a couple of games when they play badly. Last-minute winner against Southampton, penalty. Mm. Weird, dodgy last-minute winner against Burnley. Managed to hold on for 20 minutes against Swansea when Swansea were all over them, really, and could have scored an equaliser. They've had a couple of great performances. They were fantastic against Chelsea. You know, they've got some very good players. But they're not flying quite like everyone thinks they are. They were really poor against Middlesbrough on a Champions League week last week. Middlesbrough, they hit the bar. They had some really good chances on the counter-attack. And I think there's a model there for Tottenham to take advantage of.
Can we do the questions, just because I need the loo quite badly?
Yeah, we can do the questions.
I mean, we can edit that out. We can keep it in. Or I can go to the loo and come back.
No, we're keeping it in. This is behind the curtain.
Okay.
We've run the sweet
Arsenal content.
Yeah, no, we've run over by quite a long way anyway. Let's do some listener questions. Hypothetical question. Bale comes back, but we lose Pochettino to Real Madrid. Or do we keep Poch and never get Bale back?
Ooh.
What would you prefer? Because annoyingly...
That's quite hard. I'm not really nice allowed to talk about Poch to Real Madrid at the moment.
It'd be nice to have them sort of together.
It would be.
As somebody else, Dominic Taylor 97 asked, are we missing a genuine clutch player? And I had to ask what that meant, because I don't know.
Right.
And apparently that is like a Bale. Well, like a player to score winners when you're not playing well.
I've forgotten... Did you say this on air or before we start recording about Poch having a superstar?
No, I didn't say it, so you can say it now.
When he said,
I've asked Pochettino before what he would do if he had a superstar, and when I say superstar, I mean Cristiano Ronaldo, Gareth Bale, Messi, and because Pochettino's all about the system and you know the work rate, but he says that if he had a superstar player, he would build around them. He'd let Gareth Bale cheat and hang around and not track back, and he'd build the team around that. So it's pretty interesting because you think of Pochettino, the team's always bigger than any individual. That's what we're all about. I mean, really, Spurs could afford to lose almost anyone and they could probably replace them just about. But if he was at Real Madrid, he would quite happily build a team around Bale and change his philosophy, which is quite interesting because he bangs about his philosophy and the
project. That's quite interesting.
He'd have to change it for everyone, wouldn't he, though?
Yeah, so everyone has to do a different role to cater for your Gareth Bale or your
but everyone would have to train differently, surely.
Well, I do think that's, again, I can't remember if I said this, I think it was before we were recording, but I think the one question about, the big question about Pochettino is his methods haven't been tested on a superstar ever.
Mm.
So how would Ronaldo, who's got a family, who's got commitments, who's got whatever else going on, respond to being told, you're doing double sessions every day this week? You're doing a session in the morning, we're doing a two-hour break, and you're coming back. Would players go for that? And I think maybe what Greg said suggests that Pochettino, I think he is really adaptable and he works with what he's got. So maybe he would be happy to change, ditch the philosophy, change whatever to work with these different players. But that isn't the question, is it? I think I would have Bale come back because I think he's a phenomenal
player.
What,
and lose Poch? No.
I think so.
I wouldn't.
Pochettino's the most important man at the club by an absolute mile, especially when we're building a stadium, so we can't spend a load of money.
I kind of agree with that. Imagine Bale and that team.
Yeah, of course, but we've got Kane who's scoring as many goals as Bale did.
We would have Kane and Bale. Remember AVB, pretty unspectacular manager, and Spurs almost finished fourth. With a pretty crap team, just because of Gareth Bale.
Put him
back in that team.
But we finished third.
Hire someone decent. Go and get get Tuchel, or go and get someone. Throw money at them. Get them in with Bale.
It'd have to be Tuchel, I think. But you know, but Enoch bought Tottenham in 2001, and it took them 13 years to find the manager.
Their manager.
Do you know what I mean? They went through 9 managers. They thought. Villas-Boas, they thought, was Pochettino was exactly what they thought Villas-Boas was going to be. And look how that ended up. So
completely
I don't
agree.
Think we're in any position to risk another manager now.
Yeah,
I think
point.
We've got potential superstars. Like Kane is a superstar. He is. Why not? He's got 50 goals in 2 seasons.
He's not going to get the ball in a halfway line, dribble past 4 players and stick it in the top corner, but he's going to score 25 goals a season, which will do me.
Exactly, I'm not going to say no to that.
We're not losing Kane. That's the
no.
This
but
question
I think,
doesn't
but
say
I think we've got our
Poch and Kane leave.
But I think
it says Bale comes
Bale.
Back and plays with Kane.
I think the point is you want Bale back because we're missing something in that second line or whatever he calls it. But even in the Premier League, you look at the teams above us at the moment or around us. There are loads of players who would improve Tottenham at the moment. You put Hazard or Coutinho or De Bruyne or Silva, Ozil. There are the problem is those players aren't good enough. So we probably need to go to the transfer market. Do a deal and find someone who can get to that kind of level.
Or Tom Carroll. let's probably leave it at that. We've run over by quite a bit this week, but that's because there's been such good content.
Cracking content.
And also Dan needs a wee.
Yeah, I'm desperate.
Greg, thanks so much for coming down, mate. Hopefully we get you on before the end of the season again, if you're willing to come down to the sweat box that is this recording studio. It is boiling, isn't it? Thank you so much for coming down. Anything coming up that we should be looking out for?
No, I'll keep my powder dry.
Nice.
For now.
Dan's not likely to keep his powder dry for too much longer.
Struggling, mate.
Yeah. Wrap it up. Thanks very much, Dan, for coming down.
Cheers,
as ever.
Mate.
Anything coming up?
More of these. More of these podcasts. Nothing much.
No, that's all. Thank you very much for joining us on the Tottenham Way. We'll be back on Monday with an Arsenal review and the next game. Thanks very much. Come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs.